Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. 大家好，欢迎你们回来 Des Bishop 广播。Welcome back, guys. I'm not going to do a Mandarin podcast, but I have been watching a very long Chinese series on Netflix, The Rise of the Phoenix, which I've never even checked what the Chinese name is, but it's a very long sort of, historical fantasy based in the sort of warring states historical time of China, 中国, the Middle Kingdom. And it makes me think that my Chinese is like amazing. So I got a bit of a Chinese brain on me, but that's neither here nor there. Welcome back to the pod. I'm on crutches now. I had a arthroscopic hip surgery, a hip scope, and we'll see. But hasn't been that bad, the pain. And I can walk with crutches with a bit of weight on it. Today is day four. And for all those that were concerned after seeing some crutches on my Insta story, I have done shows. I did surgery on Tuesday. I did a show on Thursday and Friday. And another show tonight in Mullingar. So thanks for everybody that came out for those shows. Next weekend, by the way, Ballymaloe in Cork on Thursday, Saturday in Belfast, and Sunday in the Wexford Opera House, or the National Opera House in Wexford. And then after that, we got Cavan, Mullingar, Athenry, Drogheda, Blanchardstown, Pavilion Dunleary, Mermaid Arts Centre in Bray. I know I'm forgetting a couple there. Waterford. But anyway, go on desbishop.net/tour dates. All the tour dates are there as we go solid into May before I go back and get married. So a few things I want to talk about on the pod. First, I'm going to talk about the Irish weather, which seems cheap, but it has been phenomenal, and I want to discuss that. And I know every now and then we have a little bit of a free speech, cancel culture discussion here, but I'm always too much of a wuss to really get into it out of fear of offending the wrong people. But the New York Times, the editorial board of the New York Times, not an opinion piece, the editorial board of the New York Times has written a very substantial article about what they feel is a threat of free speech in America. And I'm just going to let their article guide me. So I'm going to read out segments of that article and guide a conversation, which I think they have set the right tone for the way that we need to perceive discourse, free speech, quote unquote, cancel culture, retaliation, retribution, and all the things that we've discussed. So I'm going to discuss that after we discussed the Irish weather, which has been incredible. I mean, global warming, alarmist, incredible, late March. I mean, I've had some memories of late March weather. I've definitely swam in the Irish Sea on a St. Patrick's Day over a decade ago, I recall. But I can't remember anything as consistent as this late March. Essentially, people walking around in shorts. I've just come back from sitting outside a cafe in Rialto, Daddy's Cafe, the saving grace of Dublin 8, or certainly this part of Dublin 8. Definitely true evidence of gentrification. But I have to say, I fucking love it. And I've been here all along. Either I'm an early gentrifier or I'm some sort of connector between the past and the present. I don't know what I am. Judge me, whatever you decide I am, gentrifier or not. But I have to say, I am one that really appreciates a nice cafe just up the street from my house. And on a beautiful sunny day, south facing South Circular Road, Daddy's Cafe was bliss this morning, sitting outside in the sun. I was sweating. I had a sweater on, which it was too much. It's literally sit outside t-shirt weather in March. It's been like this for days. I'm sitting in my kitchen right now, so hence probably the slightly more echoey acoustics of the kitchen, which I've talked about before, but I have both doors open. There's already one fucking fly in the kitchen. You know, Irish houses don't have screens, which is fine, but good weather in Ireland means a number of things. The first thing it means that you're going to have to tolerate flies. You know, if you want to feel Mediterranean on a nice day in Ireland, flies are part of the equation. You know, you don't have to feel dirty. The flies are getting in. There's nothing you can do. And right now, my kitchen, it's blissful. Now, there's a bit of noise from outside, which you'll probably hear. There was a dog barking before. There will be various heroin addicts walking back and forth between the old Fatima Mansions and Dolphin House. You might hear some of their drama as they pass, trying to wheel and deal. This is not a criticism of my area, but I will just tell you that one of the main growth industries in my neighborhood is the buying and selling of heroin. Just so you know, I live across the street from a very large heroin supermarket, and I'm not making a judgment. It is one of the businesses of the 1980s and 90s and now into the 2020s here in Dolphin's Barn. So I apologize for that noise, but needless to say, what comes in with the open door is that the flies and joy, the joy of an early sort of an early onset summer here in Dublin. The other thing that comes with good Irish weather, which I put up on TikTok and it did very well, I was surprised how many people identified, is good weather anxiety. People that aren't from a unpredictable weather country like Ireland, and I know that there are others, but Ireland has very unpredictable weather. You don't have a guaranteed summer. You don't know what you're going to get. So when you get it, there is this sense that you must use it to its fullest extent. And it's stressful. It's fucking stressful because if you're free like I have been, even though I'm injured, but I have been free during the day, free to go outside. So any minute that you are not outside doing something, gardening or walking or jogging or meeting somebody or sitting outside a pub having a pint or, you know, doing laundry, which seems to be the biggest thing. Just this sense that it's a waste, that it's a sin almost, a mortal sin in Ireland. You could be excommunicated from the Irish Catholic Church for not making the most of a beautiful day. If you're in the office, you must take your lunch outside. You must roll up your suit sleeves and sit outside the canal on Bagot Street and flood the grass along the canal with people just saying, isn't it great? The weather is great. There's just a sense that it must be celebrated as if, in fact, we have moved on from Catholicism and we are now praising the God of random good weather, because that's what good weather is in Ireland. It's random. You know, in New York, in the summer, 70% of the days are hot summer days, you know, and even when it's raining, it's still hot. You know, there's nothing random about New York summer. You know, maybe the only thing random about a New York summer is every now and then it might get down to 60 degrees and you'd be like, what? Oh, it's, you know, like might get down to like, you know, 17, 18 degrees. What's going on? Whereas in Ireland, 17, 18, it's a celebration. Irish weather is random. This is random. So we praise you, Celtic Druid gods of good weather. But we curse you for the stress you have created for us, because it's easy to get things done on a rainy day. And I have found it hard to not be able to take full advantage of this weather. Like I should be, I was going to do this outside, but even though some people probably can hear me because I have the doors open, I just felt like I wouldn't be as free to speak my mind because people could definitely hear me if I was sitting outside in my back, You know, and then people would be shouting out, what are you doing in there? Who the fuck are you talking to, Des? You know, because everyone fucking knows I live here. And if you think I'm exaggerating, or you think, oh, Des has got such a fucking ego that he thinks everybody in fucking Dolphin Barn knows where he lives. Okay, so here's a story. The other day, on Wednesday, I get back from arthroscopic surgery. Steve, hello, Steve-O, Stephen Mullen, former regular guest on this podcast, who I keep forgetting to have podcasting equipment with to do an episode. He went down on the train to Waterford to pick me up with my car. So he drove my car back because I can't drive for a week. Beautiful, selfless moment from Stephen Mullen. We get to my back gate, and as we're like, you know, organizing, awkward, getting out of the car, I'm on crutches. This kid comes by, all right, Des, yeah, all right, what's your story? I was just with your godson there, yeah. You know, Aiden is my godson. Everybody around here knows that Aiden is my godson. You know, he was my first godson, born in 1999. And he's about to be 23, Jesus Christ, in April. And so everyone knows that I am his godfather, so it's like a connection. Right, he's an original. He's an OG, Aiden. So he's like a Fatima kid, right? So some kid knows my connection to Aiden. So he connects himself to me. He's like, I was just with Aiden there, yeah. Will you sponsor me football team? Now, this kid looks pretty young, right? I don't really know how old this kid is, but he looks pretty young, and I like to look after these kids because like honestly, a lot of them have fucking tough lives. So I was like, listen, I don't have any money. Come back later, and I'll sponsor the football team. But, you know, I don't know. To be honest with you, he doesn't seem young enough to be getting his football team sponsored. In that, like, he looks like high teens, right? So, but I'm also, like, aware of, like, it's always a balance of, like, looking after people or, like, and not having them fuck with you and looking after them and then they kind of like keep coming at you, right? So anyway, I was like, come back, so he didn't come back. I went to bed that first night. I'm in pain. I'm trying to find a good position. 5:30 in the morning, 5:30 a.m., this fucking kid is rapping on my door. Des! It's the little fella. He's like he's like opening the letterbox. Des, it's the little fella. Yeah, Des, it's the little fella. Right? So I don't answer the fucking door because of all the times to have a fucking lunatic whacking on my door at 5:30 a.m., I can't do anything. I can't put any weight on my right leg. I'm on crutches. So I'm like, fuck this motherfucker, man. You know, of all the times to like have this 5:30 a.m. conundrum, I got to deal with this guy. So I didn't answer the door. I went and did my show in Tala Thursday night. I come home. Bella, my cousin who's living with me, who is 21 years old and from Black Rock, who definitely can't deal with the fucking politics of Dublin 8, tells me that the little fella was back ramming on the door at fucking 9 p.m. So anyway, yesterday he knocks on the door at like a normal time, like 11 or 12, you know, in the morning, afternoon. And he's like, all right. I said, bro, were you fucking knocking on my door at 5:30 a.m.? He's like, no. I was like, you fucking were. You were out of your mind. He's like, oh, yeah, I kind of do remember that, yeah. So he was like, will you sponsor me football team? So I was like, so he said it was a fiver when I saw him when I was getting out of the car with the crutches. So I was like, how much? He goes, like 15 euro. So then I know that he's an addict. I said, how old are you? He said, I'm 20. Now, he's got, I would say, maybe some development issues. Like, who knows what's going on? But he does not look 20. So now I know that he's an addict, right? I can see it in his eyes. They're pinned. So I'm like, I feel like I don't want to, like, tell this kid to fuck off because I just don't know. You know, so anyway, here's the story. So I said, 15, really? Yeah. I said, well, I only have a 50. Yeah? He's like, I'll go and get a change for you. Yeah. So now I'm thinking in my head, this motherfucker is not going to get change for me. Right? But this is kind of a handy situation for me because if I give him this 50 and I tell him to give me 30 back, because I'll give him 20 euros. I really don't give a fuck. I feel bad for the kid. I'll give him 50 euros. If he comes back and returns 30 euros, then fair play to him. I've given him 20 euros, and he'll be grateful. If he runs with my money and goes and buys drugs, then I never have to deal with this motherfucker again. And like in the Bronx Tale, I've gotten rid of this kid for 50 euros. Now, as it turns out, he has a crumpled up tenner in his pocket, which is real. I checked. It actually has since been spent. So he says, I'll give you this tenner now, and I'll go around the corner and I'll get you change. I'll be right back. Honestly, I'll be right back. All right? And Bella was like listening to the whole thing. I closed the door and I said, Bella, we're never going to see this kid again. And he never came back. So in the end, I was pretty happy with the transaction. I know it seems like a lot, 40 euros to get rid of this kid, but he can never say I didn't look after him. But I know I'm never going to see him again because he's going to fucking run. And every time he might accidentally crisscross with me, I know he's going to be like, oh, sorry, Dad, we got distracted. Yeah, I'll get you that 20 euro. Yeah, you know, like whatever. I don't care. You know, I'm cool with it. But anyway, needless to say, that's what it's like living in Dolphin's Barn. Okay, so I'm not like your average gentrifier. My people are the people from the flats. But it's complicated, right? You know, because I am not from here, and I don't want them to think that I think I'm better than them, but I also don't want them to think that they can fucking walk all over me. So it's always a bit of a dance. And I would consider that situation to be not my finest bit of politics, not my finest bit of Dolphin's Barn politics, but at the same time, it was just like, I need this guy to not be fucking knocking on my door at 5:30 in the morning. So I feel like him essentially robbing 20 euros from me is, first of all, I now know 100% that he's like an addict, which I have a lot of empathy for, but I also don't need fucking addicts bugging me. So of course I will do anything to help an addict, but I also, you know, don't want to have them knocking on my fucking door at 5:30. So overall, I think I'm going to get a decent outcome, but I think I could have had a similar outcome if I just said, bro, I don't have the fucking money. Don't be knocking on my door. And if you knock on my door again, it's going to fucking piss me off. I feel like he's not an intimidating guy and he probably would have left me alone. But all in all, I think I'm going to get a decent outcome. Cost me 40 euros. You know, this might sound a bit morbid, but I hope he didn't OD on my 40 euros. But I definitely know that he was fucking putting it in his arm. So that's life in Dolphin's Barn. I didn't mean to get that. I hope that wasn't depressing. But this is what happens with the good weather. It causes me so much anxiety. It ends up turning into sort of like an odd, sad story of this kid in Dolphin's Barn. But anyway, the little fella will be all right. Well, he'll have one of three outcomes. He will end up in jail. Pretty common outcome here. He will end up in recovery, which is, you know, a common outcome. All the people I know from this neighborhood are all from recovery, or three, he'll end up dead, which will be very sad. So, you know, we'll hope for the middle one. We'll hope for the middle one for this kid, and we'll leave that there. So anyway, guys, whatever. You never know how a conversation is going to go. I hope I didn't depress you there. But that's a bit of, you know, the reality of life in the flats. So let's get into this New York Times article, okay? And listen, this is not going to be a rant against cancel culture. This is going to be a very balanced conversation about the way that the two, essentially there are two extremes of this argument, and it's really going to sort of try to find a middle ground. So let me read out the first couple of paragraphs of this, because I think they're worth reading out, all right? So this is New York Times op-ed, March 18th, 2022. For all the tolerance and enlightenment that modern society claims, Americans, oh yeah, and I must apologize, this is geared at Americans, but I think we can use this as a jumping on point for what is really an international issue, but in America, is definitely it's more polarized, and it's I feel like in America it's almost a more pressing issue. For all the tolerance and enlightenment that modern society claims, Americans are losing hold of a fundamental right as citizens of a free country, the right to speak their minds and voice their opinions in public without fear of being shamed or shunned. This social silencing, the depluralizing of America, has been evident for years, but dealing with it stirs yet more fear. It feels like a third rail, dangerous. For a strong nation and open society, that is dangerous. How has this happened? In large part, it's because the political left and the right are caught in a destructive loop of condemnation and recrimination around cancel culture. Many of the left refuse to acknowledge that cancel culture exists at all, believing that those who complain about it are offering cover for bigots to peddle hate speech. Many on the right, for all their braying about cancel culture, have embraced an even more extreme version of censorlessness as a bulwark against a rapidly changing society, with laws that would ban books, stifle teachers, and discourage open discussions in classrooms. Many Americans are understandably confused then about what they can say and where they can say it. People should be able to put forward viewpoints, ask questions, and make mistakes, and take unpopular but good faith positions on issues that society is still working through, all without fearing cancellation. Now, in my opinion, those are a very strong collection of paragraphs that are important for where we're at in society today. I think the level of importance is such that this could be like a very important time in history. It's a reckoning of major social change that has been driven by technological change, a huge technological change that is the internet, and it has got us to this point. And at any time in society where huge social change happens, society must reorganize, must re-legislate, and must try to understand how, you know, best to handle it. You know, what is the best way? So to pretend that this isn't a very important discussion right now is dangerous. And I am 100% in agreement with so much of what is being said here. And I think for me, and I think I've said it before, one of the big takes from the intro there is that the being wrong, the having the wrong opinion, it is so dangerous. And I know if you're somebody who takes this very simple position that cancel culture is kind of a myth, and that that people who end up in trouble for their opinions are people that deserve it. I think you're only looking at the extreme examples, and there are some people that deserve it, but there are also people that end up with quite, canceled, it has become quite a broad term, but there are people that end up with like probably more severe consequences, more severe stress, more severe career repercussions than you care to admit for like moderate mistakes, the mistakes of perhaps not being fully informed but having a strong opinion, I think that is the crux of what this article is getting at. We're gonna go further into the article, but straight away, there should not be as much of a pushback against somebody's initial opinion needing to be challenged, and without shame, like they say. You know, like it's okay to be wrong. You know, it's okay to not fully understand an issue yet, especially when, as they mention in the article, society doesn't have full consensus yet. You know, we're trying to railroad home consensus by shutting down all dissent to your opinion. You know, and this doesn't go for any one side. You know, it's just a sense of, It's a full-out attack on anything that strays from your opinion. But here is my question. That is the what dictators do. Any challenge to their authority is rubbed out with the fullest power of the authoritarian state. And that comes from an insecurity, a sense of any challenge could actually break down what is essentially a fickle hold on society. You know, so much power is actually much more fickle than people realize. They're just, the power itself forces people to not realize how easy it is to take it down. And in a way, some ideas can be like that. You know, why do we have such a strong annihilation of a dissenting opinion? Because on the crux of it, there's an insecurity about whether you're right or wrong. So why allow this challenge to happen? Because if your idea, your sense of what society should be, is so right in your mind, if this righteousness is so clear to you, then you should have absolutely no fear to throw your idea up against the trial of dissenting opinion. Because in the end, when your idea holds up against the dissent, it will only be stronger. But even more importantly, if your idea turns out to still need evolution, some of the dissent, which your knee-jerk reaction might be that this dissent is anti-human rights, or this dissent is, you know, a complete lack of understanding of the suffering of one group, you know? If your immediate reaction is that, but through listening to the dissent, you might discover, oh, it turns out that my absolutism has some unintended consequences which are negative, then you can amend your idea, and your idea only becomes stronger. And everybody knows in the cold light of day, you know, that society, you know, ends up, the ideas end up more robust. The ideas end up harder to challenge when they are unafraid of challenge, and when they are unafraid of evolving based on new information. You know, based on the fact that for so many things in society, they're quite new, especially these days. You know, new things in society. I don't want to give examples because, again, you know, this is an article about the fact that retribution exists, and I still live within that fear of retribution. But let's face it, society has changed rapidly, and honestly, to me, 90% of it is for the good, and I would say a lot of the challenges to the sort of almost like immediate status quo are incorrect. But even within their incorrectness, they might have a bit of wisdom that will cause that 90% of these great changes to hold up even stronger. But when instead any dissent is attacked, what you actually do is you isolate more people from any sense in inclusion in this new evolution, which leads to division, which has led us in a way to a lot of our problems today, because people then run and hide in their safer space where their toxicity actually gets worse, right? And again, I know that you're assuming I'm talking about different groups here, but that actually happens on, you know, it actually happens on both sides. I mean, people do run to the extremes and get more comfortable. And then, you know, society only gets more divided. So, I mean, listen, that was a kind of a wishy-washy way of saying that we shouldn't be so afraid of having wrong ideas out there. And of course, the extreme rebuttal to all this is that, are you saying that we should allow hate speech? And I'm not actually, you know, there are so many things that rile up the internet that deserve this immediate ire, deserve, you know, a sense of that this is clearly wrong. You know, this is not dismissing that some knee-jerk responses to extreme opinions are wrong. Those things deserve it. But that's not what this article is actually talking about. You know, there's a lot of people that are slower to come to terms with changing society that are expressing you know, really, what are concerns of huge amounts of society? You know, because when I give this 90-10, that's really not even true. Like, there are huge sections of society that struggle with certain changes, that feel left behind with how society has changed. Some of them feeling left behind is a paranoia. It's not true. But, you know, some of it might actually be things that people need to understand, you know, or certainly they might need to say, okay, so how can we better sell this idea? You know, so you can't just dismiss it all, you know. And I know it's tedious sometimes. You know, sometimes it's tedious. Like, why do we have to keep listening to the misgivings, you know, of, you know, what you might think are bad actors? But they're not always bad actors. You know, it's sometimes that just people just can't comprehend it. And by attacking them when they put their head up, and they might say something that, I guess, to certain groups is offensive, you know, but they're putting their head up and they're saying, this is what I think. And then you're saying, you are wrong and you should be banished and you're fucking attacked and swamped by the mob. You'll never see them again, you know? And in a way, then they become the enemy. And this, you know, evolution of ideas, it doesn't need to be so confrontational. It doesn't need to be so antagonistic. So that's why I thought it was not a game changer, but the fact that the New York Times is coming out there and saying this is really important. So I'll just read a little more. However you define cancel culture, Americans know it exists and feel its burden. In a new national poll commissioned by Times Opinion and Siena College, only 34% of Americans said they believe that all Americans enjoyed freedom of speech completely. The poll found that 84% of adults said it is a very serious or somewhat serious problem, that some Americans do not speak freely in everyday situations because of fear of retaliation or harsh criticism. I'll just skip a little bit. Freedom of speech and expression is vital to human beings' search for truth and knowledge about our world. A society that values freedom of speech can benefit from the full diversity of its people and their ideas. At the individual level, human beings cannot flourish without the confidence to take risks, pursue ideas, and express thought that others might reject. Most important, freedom of speech is the bedrock of democratic self-government. If people feel free to express their views in their communities, the democratic process can respond to and resolve competing ideas. Ideas that go unchallenged by opposing views risk becoming weak and brittle rather than being strengthened by tough scrutiny. When speech is stifled or when dissenters are shut out of public discourse, a society also loses its ability to resolve conflict and it faces the risk of political violence. Maybe I should have just read that, because I waffled on for 10 minutes and they fucking nailed it in about 10 sentences. But, you know, I think that, you know, that's very reasonable, a thing to absorb. I think that we should be able to have this discussion more outside of cancel culture, you know, because cancel culture has now, it's such a hot topic. Like, for example, like, just to personalize it for a sec, comedians get asked a lot about cancel culture. And I don't answer that question very often in public. I go into like footballer mode, you know, and I just kind of like, I just say, listen, well, actually, this is a real take that I have, which is, it's impossible to deny that what quote unquote is cancel culture has been a very effective weapon in the fight for increased human rights for groups of people, for increased inclusion of marginalized people, for equality, for the rights of women, for sexual assault survivors, for black people, relation to police violence, like all these, I could go on, but the use of the mob on the internet has been effective with genuine positive change. So when somebody says cancel culture is a problem, it's very easy to say, well, what about all that? And I would say, well, that has been an effective use of what I would more say is online activism, that has a tactic of shaming people who are resisting that change. Okay? So it has been effective, and it has been used well by good faith you know, like a good faced activism, activists. However, it also, like all power, gets abused and can be used in a way to stifle debate. It can be used to retaliate against rivals. It can be used to actually defame, shame, you know, destroy people for reasons that are not clear in the canceling, in that because there are groups of people that will thrive in watching somebody go down, quote unquote, get canceled, somebody can drive that campaign with ulterior motives. And that was very clear. If you listen to or you read an article in The Atlantic about canceling within, you know, the college community, sort of amongst the intellectual classes, there can be quite a bit of that. And, you know, also there can just be like essentially abuse of power that has happened. You know, there have been shifts in power dynamics. I'm not saying that there doesn't need to be more shifts, but there have been shifts in power dynamics, and certain groups of people have gained quite a lot of power, particularly online, and that power does get abused. So I don't understand what the great fear is when we can clearly see that there's been great positives to come out of this online activism, but there's also clear examples of abuse of that power. All power ends up being abused. Like, that's not controversial. Like, literally, so many of these people who claim to speak truth to power obviously then end up in denial with other power that's being abused that doesn't suit their argument. But that's okay too. Again, these are all just the evolution of ideas. It's okay to acknowledge that, oh shit, it turns out that some of these things that have been a force for good are now also being abused. To deny that, like, all fucking revolution. It's funny because all revolutions in the end, not all revolutions, but let's just say historically, when oppressed groups rise up and they end up getting power, that power obviously corrupts certain aspects of that change. And there will be a time like an Animal Farm where it becomes four legs good, two legs better, you know, and the pigs were standing up. Like, it's only natural that power gets abused, because power is the real corrupting force, in my opinion. How many dramas do we need to watch where, you know, the power corrupts and ultimately destroys the individual and often destroys the society? I mean, this is just fucking human nature. So with all this fucking knowledge about human nature and how power corrupts, why are we so afraid to acknowledge that with this power dynamic shift, there are people within the new dynamic that are abusing their power? It's not a big fucking deal. It doesn't diminish the good work that's been done by the online activism. It actually, what it does is protect the historical positives from being sullied by the corrupt present. What's so wrong with that? To not be afraid to check in, to reevaluate, to have a look now within these new power dynamics of what's good and what's bad. That's fucking healthy, you know? It's good. And I see it all the time because, let's face it, now that, let's just speak specifically about certain groups, the right, you know, the I hate saying the right, but, you know, essentially the people that use the term cancel culture in terms of it being a negative thing as a weapon against so much speech themselves, despite their rallying against censorship, and they're crying for free speech, what they're actually doing is only wanting their dissenting speech. They're not happy with the thriving of new speech. They're not happy with previously oppressed groups getting power. They're not happy with the normalization. Let's just say, for example, they're not happy with the normalization of homosexuality, you know, the fact that, you know, this has just become more a part of mainstream society, even though the word normal is silly, but you know what I mean. They're not happy with more equality with the sexes. They're 100% against trans rights, and trans is complicated. I will say that, but outside of the complication of trans, you know, that is an area where I think things are gray and needs less canceling, but the people that complain most about what I would think are the more contentious issues around trans rights are people that really don't want any trans rights at all. So that's part of the problem, is that the right, or the extreme right, or the sort of like anti-progressive people hide behind this sense of censorship and free speech and cancel culture as a way to mask their bigotry. So I think that exists as well. Don't get me wrong. All these discussions, I'm somebody who has a lot more sympathies and affinities with the enemies of the Tucker Carlsons. Let's just put it out there, right? But I'm also somebody who's aware that the extreme end of the people I have more of an affinity for they're doing more harm than good sometimes, in that, they eat their own, number one. That's what I would say. They're just so drunk on their power, some of them, that they will actually destroy their allies just because it's so empowering to have someone or some group or institution to go after. And that is actually unhealthy, because they're actually driving people who would be more likely to align with them away from them, because as I said, the power of it is so effective. And you know, honestly, infectious. And some of it, honestly, is it's not just that the power is corrupting, but it's actually financially rewarding, in that the internet kind of rewards this canceling moment. Like, it's just very hot on the internet, and you know, hits equal money and data. And so obviously there's quite a lot of profit from this, which obviously you can get deep into the Facebook side of things. But of course, it's just very hard, because it's so fucking tedious, these arguments, to remind the extreme right, these people who are definitely anti-progressive, that the main cancelers in my lifetime were the fucking church, you know. And in the early part, it's funny, because nowadays comedians always get asked about cancel culture. But in the early part of my career, the people that complained most about our fucking jokes were the religious.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think I've talked about that before, but, you know, they came after Tommy Tiernan for making a joke about Jesus on The Late Late. You know, I have an official fucking complaint to the BAI, which, you know, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, which wasn't held up. I made a joke about fucking communion. I made a joke about the Eucharist on The Late Late. A funny fucking joke about communion. You know, in a Catholic country where the majority of people went to fucking mass, it's a very easy thing to joke about. I made a joke about fucking communion, and they fucking put a complaint into the BAI. Now, it wasn't fucking held up, but the people who complained for a long time were the fucking religious, you know? You know, I didn't make an abortion joke in Ireland for such a fucking long time, because the anti-abortion people were the most fucking, the most litigious. The people I've had to deal with the most in my career have been the religious, the fucking anti-abortion people. They're the ones that were actually fucking trying to stifle speech for a long time, you know? And they're the ones that, you know, are the loudest now talking about free speech, you know, because they're fucking Johnny come latelys to that fucking problem, you know, because they didn't give a fuck before when they had all the power, you know. And in Ireland, I mean, listen, Watch the Magnum Laundries. You want to talk about fucking cancel culture? Look at the shame of all those women. I mean, whatever. We could go on and on and on. But look at the shame of all those women. You know, sexual shame for this fucking warped, misogynistic fucking society that the Irish, uniquely Irish Catholic Church created, you know, that all these women should live in shame, you know? That was fucking cancel culture, you know? But what's the point? Like, when you get into these arguments, like you listen to fucking Ben Shapiro and like they've all got a response. It all becomes what about, you know, what aboutery, and it's pointless. And I'm in it right now. I'm literally in the what aboutery, but I just need to remind people that I know what's up. You know, I'm not a fucking ally to the bigots, okay? But the problem is that dismissing all criticism of cancel culture as being an ally to the bigots is as much of a problem as these fucking assholes at fucking Tucker Carlson bringing up every fucking, you know, hotbed fucking culture war issue as if it's the end of society. It's the same thing. They're both as damaging to our society, all right? Just saying everybody who complains about the lack of free speech in society is a bigot is the same as, you know, this Ben Shapiro right-wing fucking podcast world where, you know, they exaggerate the shit out of whatever latest quote-unquote censorship issue is popping up. But to dismiss everything they say is also a crime because sometimes they're fucking right. Sometimes they're right that there is a lack of free speech. You know? And the problem is that we're so fucking divided that everybody's gone deep into their corners. And what I loved about this New York Times article is that they're trying to broaden out that fucking center, you know? I mean, Obama's been fucking saying this for like 6 or 7 years, you know, complaining about people being run out of colleges. You know, it's not really that controversial. So let me go back to the article because I'm getting carried away. I hope this is all right, but fucking, I'm putting it up. I don't give a shit. Let's get into it. So the Times Opinion Commissioned the poll to provide more data and insight that can inform a debate mired in extremes. This editorial board plans to identify a wide range of threats to freedom of speech in the coming months and offer possible solutions, which is just so great that the Times is taking this on because, like, I literally feel like this is one of the biggest, you know, this is a big issue of my lifetime, you know, and you might hear that and think I'm exaggerating, but I promise you that I guess because as a comedian, you feel a little bit more connected to this. And I don't think I'm that important. Trust me, this is not fucking hubris on my behalf, okay? This is not a sense of like, I think that cancel culture affects me more, but I promise you that I am in an industry that is affected by this. And I am also in a world where you notice the negative effects of this happening. And I am definitely somebody who has been afraid to say certain things. And they are not that controversial, but I bite my fucking tongue. So I am so glad that the Times is taking this on because it needs an institution like the Times. And by the way, the funny thing is that the Times is the enemy of the Tucker Carlson crew. The Times is the enemy of the Ben Shapiros. You know? But they are literally willing to make arguments that will, in a way, help that group. Because they can see the fucking problem, all right? You know, the Times is not Fox News, all right? So it needed an institution with this much clout, you know, this much, I would say, connection to the center. Freedom of speech requires not just a commitment to openness and tolerance in the abstract. It demands consensuousness about both the power of speech and its potential harms. We believe it isn't enough for Americans to just believe in the right of others to speak freely. They should also find ways to actively support and protect those rights. We are under no illusion that this is easy. Our era, especially, is not made for this. Social media is awash in speech of the point scoring, picking apart, piling on, put down variety. A deluge of misinformation and disinformation online has heightened this tension, making the internet a more gracious place does not seem high on anyone's agenda, and certainly not for most of the tech companies that control it. But the old lesson of think before you speak has given way to the new lesson of speak at your peril. You can't consider yourself a supporter of free speech and be policing and punishing speech more than protecting it. Free speech demands a greater willingness to engage with ideas we dislike and greater self-restraint in the face of words that challenge and even unsettle us. So, I mean, I'm essentially what I'm doing here is proving that I'm not as articulate as the New York Times, because they are making my fucking points that I'm waffling on about for ages in one fucking paragraph. But it's so nice to know that they were thinking the same way. Now, I read this early in the week. I haven't actually gone back over it. But obviously, it's affected my thinking. But when I read it, I was just like, oh my God. I feel seen. I felt seen when I read this fucking article. You know? And of course, hey, listen, go ahead. Somebody who's annoyed by me right now, go ahead and say, of course you're annoyed. You're a fucking straight white guy at the fucking top of the pyramid with all your fucking power being attacked. But I'm open to that fucking power being attacked. I'm completely open to it. You know, I'm open to a more level society. You know, it's not about that. You know, and if you think that that's where I'm coming from, you're missing the point. I mean, I'm just gonna read this next paragraph, and then I might just make sure that I'm not missing important paragraphs, because this is very important in terms of free speech, because people can make this mistake. It is worth noting here the important distinction between what the First Amendment protects, freedom from government restrictions on expression, and the popular conception of free speech, the affirmative right to speak your mind in public, on which the law is silent. The world is witnessing, in Vladimir Putin's Russia, the strangling of free speech through government coercion, government censorship, and imprisonment. That is not the kind of threat to freedom of expression that Americans face. Yet, something has been lost. The poll clearly shows a dissatisfaction with free speech as it experienced and understood by Americans today. So that is important to point out, because the Tucker Carlsons definitely complain about free speech in a way that seems analogous to what's going on in Russia right now. And it isn't, because you can literally complain the whole fucking time. You know, and can I just digress for one sec? Because funnily enough, a lot of people on the extreme right have these kind of weird sympathies with fucking Russia right now, okay? Which is just a sort of a knee-jerk reaction to the fact that the mainstream media, quote-unquote the mainstream media, and like democratic institutions are clearly siding with Zelensky's Ukraine. And not just parroting Putin's propaganda about the war, but they're also loving pointing out that there's a hypocrisy going on, because America and other NATO countries have bombed other countries and been horrific. And this is 100% an absolute fact. These things are true, right? And I would never disagree, but I just think it's very interesting that they like to make the comparison. All the criticism of the way Western governments have treated other countries is 100% true. But you can't compare the fact that you are saying this in the West publicly every day to high amount audiences. Huge amounts of people are listening to you complaining about the American government, complaining about Western democratically elected governments, and you're experiencing no government repercussions. Now, cancel culture may be a repercussion, and you may or may not deserve some of the pushback. That I will accept, and I can understand how maybe sometimes your frustrations are warranted with the mob rule and cancel culture on the internet, but you will not get pushback from the government. You will not get censored by these governments like Putin is shutting down all dissent. Remember that. That's the most important thing. You all are free to fucking put it up online. Now, let's get into the debate about tech companies. Fine. All day, the fact that some of you are being deplatformed, sometimes you might have a point, and I am very much open to that discussion, whether that's good or bad. That is valid to throw into the debate that we're talking about right now. But let's not fucking compare Putin's censorship with this quote-unquote lack of free speech in America. So now I want to go to the synopsis because actually let me read this. The full thorough defense of free speech was once a liberal idea. Many of the legal victories that expanded the realm of permissible speech in the United States came in defense of liberal speakers against the power of the government. A ruling that students couldn't be forced to recite the Pledge of Allegiance, a ruling protecting the rights of students to demonstrate against the Vietnam War, a ruling allowing the burning of the American flag. And yet, many progressives appear to have lost faith in that principle. This was a source of great frustration for one of those who responded to our poll, Emily Leonard, a 93-year-old from Hartford, Connecticut, who described herself as a liberal. She said she was alarmed about reports of speakers getting shouted down on college campuses. We need to hear what people think, even though we disagree with them. It is the basis of our democracy, and it is absolutely essential to a continuing democracy, she said. Liberal as I am, a little to the left of Lenin, I think these kids and this whole cancel culture and so-called woke is doing us harm. They're undermining the Constitution. That's what it comes down to. Very interesting. I didn't realize it got into that. But all right, I'll read one more, okay? The progressive movement in America has been a force for good in many ways, for social and racial justice, for pay equity, for a fairer system and society, and for calling out hate and hate speech. In the course of their fight for tolerance, many progressives have become intolerant of those who disagree with them or express other opinions and taken on a kind of self-righteousness and censorousness that the right long displayed and the left long abhorred. It has made people uncertain about the contours of speech. Many know they shouldn't utter racist things, but they don't understand what they can say about race or can say to a person of a different race from theirs. Attacking people in the workplace, on campus, on social media, and elsewhere who express unpopular views from a place of good faith is the practice of a closed society. And that is the thing, that people are making good faith mistakes and they are having serious repercussions. Deny that if you want, but you are in denial of what is happening in society. That's frustrating. People are making low-level mistakes based on their own ignorance, things they didn't know, and yet the full weight is dropped down on them as if they were involved in physical violence against somebody. You know, it doesn't add up. And again, something I expressed earlier in the discussion expressed very well here. And, you know, in a way, it is a bit four legs good, two legs better. You know, there are certain groups that fought for equality fought for reform, got the reform, and then essentially became the abuser. I mean, that's kind of what that's saying. And I think it's clear. For example, The Times does not allow hate speech in our pages, even though it is broadly protected by the Constitution, and we support that principle. There is a difference between hate speech and speech that challenges us in ways that we might find difficult or even offensive. And that is a great point, you know? And where that line is should be defined more and more clearly in society. Some of these battles, I think, are necessary. Some of the things that might be considered an internet pylon might be necessary to define what is hate speech and what isn't. But some of these things are clearly not coming from a place of hate, but they are being the online justice is being administered in a way as if it was clearly hate. And I think more often than not, it's quite obvious when it is and when it isn't, you know? And I go back to the motivations behind not allowing the subtleties of that to be clear is motivated by power, clout, and financial reward for these kind of battles online. And, you know, the article is very good because it gets into, you know, okay, let's read this because this is very important because this is the other side of what you can sneak. Essentially, there are what I would consider to be some regressive ideas happening, being hid under this sort of culture war battle. So let's read this. Since there's so much reading, fuck it. I apologize if this is getting boring. At the same time, all Americans should be deeply concerned about an avalanche of legislation passed by Republican-controlled legislators around the country that gags discussion of certain topics and clearly violates the spirit of the First Amendment, if not the letter of the law. It goes far beyond conservative states yanking books about race and sex from public school libraries. Since 2021, in 40 state legislatures, 175 bills have been introduced or pre-filed that target what teachers can say and what students can learn, often with severe penalties. So it is very funny because while there's a certain sort of maybe abstract or intangible sense of injustice happening within the realm of the cancel culture argument, there are actually some very traditional bits of censorship happening in you know, more right-wing states. So it's great that they point that out. You know, and this concern about critical race theory, you know, I mean, that would be the kind of stuff that I would consider to be almost like traditional censorship coming, you know, from these people. You know, like, because I don't buy that. You know, I don't buy the sense of, you know, you're trying to make my kid feel bad for being white. I don't think that's what's going on. So, you know, again, like I said, because I'm defending cancel culture, or we're sort of like saying that cancel culture has gone too far, I am not aligning with the bigots, you know, so let's get back to this. Liberals and anyone concerned with protecting free speech are right to fight against these pernicious laws, because they go through a ton of examples of what like essentially anti-freedom laws that are being pushed by Republican states. But the reason why I'm not going through all of them is because this isn't as much of an issue in Ireland. So I don't want to get bogged down on like very specific American issues. I wanted to keep it more on the broad term of free speech in a way that most of the listeners can identify with. Because in a way, you know, honestly, America feels like in that department that it's going backwards, whereas Ireland feels like on a little bit of a different track in relation to, you know, gay marriage and abortion. These things are all recent freedoms that we've like just achieved in Ireland, whereas in the States, a lot of those freedoms are actually being eroded. So, you know, in the midst of which makes the cancel culture discussion even more problematic, because how can you deny that actually in certain places, women are ending up with less rights? And gay children are ending up with less protection in school at a time where it really felt like things were turning for the better. People are fighting against that change. So again, like I said, I am more than aware of all the nuance. But again, very American. And anyway, it's been said. So let me read this. Liberals and anyone concerned with protecting free speech are right to fight against these pernicious laws. But legal limits are not the only constraints on Americans' freedom of speech. On college campuses and in many workplaces, speech that others find harmful or offensive can result not only in online shaming, but also in the loss of livelihood. Some progressives believe that this has become a necessary and even welcome check on those in power. But when social norms around acceptable speech are constantly shifting, and when there is no clear definition of harm, these constraints on speech can turn into arbitrary rules with disproportionate consequences. And that really is the biggest issue. And people who don't want to accept that that is real are in denial. That is my opinion. Don't be in denial that some of this has turned sour. And once you are not in denial about that, actually, the quote-unquote progressive movement is going to become even more powerful. Right? And I think sometimes it helps when you see that you have become a target of that. And honestly, you will one day learn, because like they say, it's shifting so fucking quick. Who can keep up with what you can and can't say? Who can keep up with it? It changes so fucking fast, you know, and you don't need a large group to get power online. And once you have a large enough group to fucking push an agenda online, it's very quick where people can really go at you for a fucking shift in the norm that happened before you even fucking realized it. Next thing, you're an enemy of this group. That can cause you real fucking harm, you know? So don't deny that that is a real thing, you know? That's the New York Times, guys. I'm not fucking here on Breitbart.com. I'm on the New York Times. Free speech is predicated on mutual respect, that of people for one another and of a government for the people it serves. Every day in communities across the countries, Americans must speak to one another freely to refine and improve the element of our social contract. What do we owe the most vulnerable in our neighborhoods? What conduct should we expect from public servants? What ideas are so essential to understanding American democracy that they should be taught in schools? When public discourse in America is narrowed, it becomes harder to answer these questions, and the many other urgent questions we face as a society. That's the end of the article. I mean, essentially, I just read an article. I did a fucking book report. But I think it's very good. You know, I think it's very good. Obviously, the discussion on what you can and can't joke about is part of this. I'm not getting into it. That's a hard one, you know. It's a very hard one. I've never been one to get that offended at things. You know, I don't like the term junkie. Oh, even though we began this discussion where I was literally telling the experience of an addict, but I hate the term junkie, and I see comedians sometimes, and I've made fun of addiction, you know, due to my proximity to it, and I think I've done it in a way that's funny to everybody, but I don't like the term junkie. Sometimes I see comedians say junkie, and it irks me a little bit, but I also know that they're not coming from a place of hatred for addicts. You know, they're just saying a term that they don't realize is offensive to a group of people, but also, like, it doesn't matter. Society isn't going to be made or broken on the fact that some people think it's okay to say junkie, you know? So I don't fucking pipe up. I don't even go up to that comedian and say, you know, listen, like, it's not great when you say junkie, you know? I just think, like, you know, it's just fucking comedy, you know? I don't know, man, but that's me, you know, I'm in the industry, so I guess I'm desensitized. And I do believe in everybody's right to be offended, but I just believe that the currency of offense has risen. I would say that we're in like an offense boom, a bubble, an offense bubble that needs to be burst because the currency is too high. The offensive market is out of control. It's a Bitcoin-like bubble, which is controversial in itself, that, you know, just needs a correction in the marketplace. Obviously, I think a world without offense would be total chaos, but I do think that there needs to be a correction in the offense marketplace. I think its currency online definitely needs to be challenged, and I think the responsibility lies a lot with the tech companies, which, you know, is clear that they've been profiting from it. I think that cyberbullying is often much greater. The cyberbullying that goes into the mob attack is often way more of an offense than the offense that the mob is attacking, especially when it's clear as day that there's a certain level of ignorance or lack of understanding that goes into the mistake that somebody made. And I also think it's counterproductive. I think long-term the results are worse than if just engaged in a good faith debate about why they might be wrong, you know? And let's face it, nobody likes to be wrong, you know? But how many times in your own relationship have you been wrong and not really wanted to admit it straight away, but then stepped away? And sort of like within a day you come back, you're like, I'm sorry, I got angry, you know, and like resolved it. That's so much easier to do when you haven't felt so attacked that you feel wronged. You know, and there are some people that are wrong in their opinion, but are wronged so disproportionately, as the article said, that you will never see them again. They will never be back in the arena of better understanding that. And, you know, that's not healthy. So, anyway, I have threatened to talk about this for quite a long time on the pod. I never really understood how to do it. I've done it now. I haven't really expressed any strong positions on anything. There are numerous issues out there all the time. But let's hope that with things like this in the Times, that we can start to have less polarized conversations about this. Stop attacking everybody who doesn't have the same opinion as you. Allow this to be less fucking college student destroyed by Jordan Peterson. You know? Get fucking liberal activist destroyed. You know? Or listen to this straight white guy completely misunderstand the patriarchy, you know? And then everyone in there like, oh, typical entitled straight white. You know, everyone just like fucking bleh. Less of that and more of, I disagree with this guy, but let's see if we can get him to understand our point of view. And I know that's fucking pie in the sky. But I think we'll be better for it. So this is today's episode of the Des Bishop Podcast. Thank you to the New York Times. Essentially, I just read your article. And I'm not sure how much reading is the way to drive an ep, but this has been this episode. We'll be back next week with another ep. I'll be walking again, I'd say, by then, not on crutches. See you tonight in Mullingar if you're around. If you listen to this before Mullingar, I'm in Mullingar. And then there's literally like 20 tickets left for Wexford. If you wanted to go to that on Sunday. But Belfast, there's tickets left. I still haven't done a fucking proper promo for Belfast. But there's tickets left in Belfast. I got distracted by surgery. Yeah, that's it. I'll talk to you guys. Oh, yeah, listen, the usual stuff. Leave a review on Apple Pods. It really does help, you know? And then spread the word if you like the episode. Spotify, screenshots and stuff like that. Share it on Instagram. Don't cancel me. That's pretty important. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Love you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.